Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello, hello. So we, Maggie and I, are at very different levels of gratitude this morning. Gratitude's come up for both of us. Me, because I was driving along, not to her house, we're at my house, not that it matters at all. Just so full of it, literally overflowing with gratitude. Yes. And really, for so many things, but all, as ever, for me, my gratitude will always be sparked by what I perceive to be beauty. Mm. And so I was driving along the lane. The autumn colours are insane. I'm on a lane on Dartmoor. You know, yes. How can I not be completely and utterly filled up with gratitude? And it's so easy when what meets your eye is utter, utter, utter beauty. And then I was acknowledging to myself that actually, this isn't everyone's idea of beauty, and that there would be people, there are people out there in the world, even though I find it astonishing, but I do know that they do exist, who would view what I see as beauty as kind of scruffy, unkept countryside or something, and it just wouldn't float their boat at all.
No, but something else would.
But something else would, and that's what I wanted to talk about. Yes. Is not just find your gratitude because it's so incredibly good for mind, for body, for soul, mm-hmm. for the planet, for what you emanate, for what people receive mm-hmm. from you, for what you're putting into the warp and weft of life. But, good God, where did that sentence begin?
Well, I've it was forgotten. About, sometimes it's easy for people and sometimes it isn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that before we can kind of know and find gratitude, we have to examine what is it exactly that floats my boat? Mm. What does my heart long for? What is it that I find beautiful? What brings me to gratitude?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't call it gratitude. Let's start off with that one because I found, and I know a lot of people find, I know we've mentioned this before, but it's worth mentioning again, the word gratitude can take you back to childhood where you had to be grateful for things that you weren't grateful for.
Okay.
You know, tell her you're grateful. Well, I'm not. I didn't want it.
Okay, I didn't get that.
So, no, well, I'm very glad to hear it. Well, and also I had to write all these thank you letters as a child after, I'm sure people still do it. I don't know, do they? But you always wrote a thank you letter to everybody who'd ever sent you a birthday present. And as a mm-hmm. child, I found it so tedious. So it stopped my being grateful for a lot of things, I think. So I call it appreciations.
Right.
I appreciate just, and if you find gratitude difficult, change the word. That's the first thing to do because so often we don't do something because the word that describes it doesn't mean for us what the person who taught us the technique mm-hmm. things. And we've talked about words and swords yeah. so often. So for you, it's gratitude. Great. For me, it's appreciations. And I, ever since I got ill, and this is now 8 years since I was first ill, I started a pattern of 100 things I appreciate morning and 100 things I appreciate evening, except on Sundays. I take a day off on Sundays. How can I take a day off everything on Sundays if I can? But I just thought it was good to have a day when you didn't to see if you could notice differences.
I'm just very taken with the burning question for me is, how on earth long does it take to do 100?
Probably about 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. I was thinking it may be way more than that.
No, not really, because today is a difficult day because we're in the middle of moving house and so I'm absolutely knackered and but even so we'll talk about doing the process when you're not feeling like it later on. But it's so simple because the first thing always to appreciate is the fact I have my sight.
Yeah.
And from there, you can immediately go to 4 or 5 things that you've seen that are beautiful that day mm. or the night before. So, and then you've got your hearing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I wasn't wondering how you came up with 100.
Oh,
I was wondering how long it took you to name 100.
Oh, no, not that long at all, really. No. It's very simple. It charges you, it recharges you to remember the things that you appreciate. And this morning, leaving the new house, because we're in the middle of the move and the van's still going backwards and forwards and It's a terrible mess, and it's a hideous, this tiny stairway to get things up the stairs, just getting a double bed mattress up the stair around the corner.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find how to get the heating on, and we were too late to start the fire, so it was a very cold night. And it was a really interesting lesson how hard it was to kickstart the gratitudes this morning. Because I was sticking my nose out of a warm bed covered in beagles. There'd been a beagle accident in the middle of the night in the new house. One of the dogs has got PTSD from a previous incident, so she was traumatized by moving. And the dog sitter arrived this morning because we're moving vans again today, and she wanted to take them to Ilfracombe so they could run around on the beach. And I was going, no, I need you to sit in the house and just take care of my dogs. The dogs have got to settle in first. And so I didn't have time to meditate. And it's so interesting how different life is when you don't start off with your routine.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that routine, of course, is a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but it was quite hard. So I had to go through the five senses in my hands and say, I have a home to live in.
Yeah.
We will get this sorted. That's an appreciation that we will get this sorted.
Mm.
You know, I've been in situations like this before. It could be a lot worse. And in the car, again, looking at the scenery, as you said, how beautiful that is. They don't have to be complex.
No.
They really can be the warmth of your hands around a cup of tea.
Mm. Oh, for me, I could come up with 100, but I wouldn't name them.
Mm.
Typically in my own version of gratitude. But for me, it's not the scenery. It's every single thing in the scenery. And for me as well, I'd be interested to know what you make of this. For me, what my gratitude boils down to when I take it to its very core is thank you, the gods, the divine being, the ultimate no thing, for in this moment manifesting as the thing that is in front of me, or is nourishing me, or is feeding me beauty, or even is me, or is singing as a blackbird, or standing as an oak tree, or whatever. Thank you for being here now as that.
Yes.
I am so, insert swear word, grateful.
Yes.
I love it so much. I feel so profoundly nourished and privileged, and I am so bloody grateful that's my life. And especially then there's always the little back thought of, and I wish it for all beings, you know. It makes me profoundly sad that there are people who might never even know that level of gratitude because their life just sucks too much.
Mm. And it's a catch-22, isn't it? Because appreciation draws more of what you appreciate.
Mm.
So if your life sucks and you don't appreciate anything in it, you can't turn it round. I've got this comedy colleague who's a transgender, absolutely beautiful woman. She's had the operation, but she's so wired into being abused and unhappy that she just doesn't seem to be able to turn the tide. And when I say to her, think of things you appreciate, she can't.
Well, she can't even appreciate now being...
Oh, yes, she will, but there'll always be the follow-on. And this happens so often with people, which is the just one thing bit.
Mm.
Oh, yes, it's wonderful to do this, but.
Yeah, but.
But.
But, you know, buts.
Yes, and I came in here this morning moaning a bit because I just wanted to vent a bit. But once you've vented, you can turn around and go, oh, wow. And now, of course, I'm thinking, when we got there yesterday to officially move in, I was greeted by a robin at the front door.
Yay!
You know, actually hopped down as I came with, and I had two hounds on a lead.
Yeah.
And this robin turns up. And as soon as I go to the back window and look out, there's a wren.
Glorious!
I know! And I was just going, oh, how lovely. Well, you're telling me that the wildlife is saying hello.
Yeah.
And there's this magnificent willow tree, which I'm going to turn into a moon tree, which is a ritual that we have, which you plant silver at the base of a tree and ask its permission to make it your moon tree.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hang pretty things on it, just a few pretty things that don't hurt it, obviously. Mm. And you bless it every day till the full moon, and then there's a whole ceremony of consecration.
And what What is the purpose of a moon tree?
It's like creating a nature altar. It's honouring the moon
mm-hmm.
and all the cycles of the moon. And it's a natural living altar to honour the moon, which is the reflector of everything. It's just it cycles, and it's just a beautiful thing to do. I've had one before, and you just know that part of the garden knows it's blessed.
Okay, so not because I don't understand, but for the purposes of those listening who might wonder, and it's a question I've been asked in the past, what and why is an altar to you?
There's the whole of the universe is sacred, but we've forgotten that we are. And when you make an altar, it reminds you that you too are sacred.
Oh, okay. That's not what I expected to hear.
Well, that's why I build an altar.
Right.
Because everywhere is sacred, but most churches have forgotten that. And for people who live busy, crazy, secular lives, it's just a focal point. You know, when you... for example, and you never put a cup of tea on an altar. You just say, this is a place that represents everything that I revere.
Mm.
This is a place that calls me back to my true self. This is the place where I light my candle. This is the place that I say my prayers to before I meditate. It's just a focal point, really.
And in a Christian church, what is it? Why is there an altar?
That's a very good question. I'm not entirely sure. Well, the problem with the Christian church is, up until the Second Vatican Council, the altar was the focal point for... you would make a half circle. The congregation would be a half circle. And the priest would be facing away from the congregation to the east wing, which represents the coming of the light.
Mm-hmm.
Or to the east, where Jerusalem is, whichever way you want to look at it. And... It would be the focus point, landing lights, if you like,
mm-hmm.
for the divine to come through and everyone to receive it. But since Second Vatican Council, priests now have moved the altar down to the middle of the church, up on the high altar, and they stand behind it facing the congregation, which to me just cuts off the flow.
Mm.
Completely cuts off the flow. So nowadays, it's always just meant to be a focal point, but it's usually a focal point where you find God. But of course, God is everywhere, but we don't know that to start with.
Mm. Yeah, so that's what it is for me, is it's the focal point, if you like. It's, in many ways, it is the... there's a perfect word for it, which I use a lot and has slipped out of my head today. It's the mnemonic device.
Yes.
That... So for me, there are images of my allies. The allies of my holy temenos are on the altar. And those beings that I work with as a drum maker are on my altar.
Mm.
And...
Well, we're looking at it now.
Yeah, we are. Well, I am. And that it's a constant mnemonic device, both as a way of saying, look, I've assembled little images of you. Some I've made, some I've had made, some I've bought. Some are, you know, the skulls of the being of those beings in particular, or in the case of the deer, their antlers. And it's a constant reminder sitting there in the corner of, I remember you, I love you, I honour you.
Yes. And of appreciation.
Yeah, totally. Of gratitude and appreciation.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Yeah.
When I was ill, and I knew that part of it was to do with... because I hadn't managed to build a good relationship with my mother, and I was feeling, well, I was just bringing up a load of old shit, obviously, when you're ill, this is what being ill is for, really.
Mm.
And somebody advised me, I thought it was a lovely idea, I found a picture of me as a little girl at a time when I did feel abandoned, and I was wearing a dress that I absolutely hated, sitting on the swing. And I knew in that picture I was unhappy. My uncle took the picture, my parents had gone away, first ever time, and I didn't understand.
Mm.
So what I did was I got a picture of Mary representing the Great Mother. It could be Isis, but I thought Mary would work for me. One of those pictures with the Sacred Heart,
mm-hmm.
And with her arms out. And it was a picture that I liked. And I stuck my picture onto it in the place of her uterus to say, this is my mother.
Beautiful.
You know, my mother is greater than this. I can relax into the Great Mother.
how interesting the twists and turns of this conversation. I did the exact same thing with the moon.
Ah.
There was a period in my life where I felt abandoned and unloved by my mother, and just realised that it was much more about my story of her than it was about who she really was.
Yes.
And, you know, in that moment, her attention was completely somewhere else. I saw that. I saw that she was in a place of, in a way, I saw that she was in a place of unseeing.
Yes.
And that she couldn't be there for me because of what was going on for her. And so rather than allow myself to go into that kind of, you know, woe is me place, I decided that I would work on, you know, all and any of my mother shit by electing the moon as my mother and by going out every evening and having a conversation with her and acknowledging her changeability was a massive part of it. And, you know, both her cycles and her constant presence and the way that she was always there for me, but always different.
Mm.
And that I could go out and feel her light on my face. I mean, lucky me that I live somewhere with no streetlights.
Yes.
This is years ago now, I might add. We didn't live here. and that it was enormous for me. And without ever having to say anything about anything to my actual flesh and blood mother, I really, really, really healed a lot of what was going on for me around my relationship to mother. Because as one who so fundamentally believes in the statement, the way we do something is the way we do everything, when I examined my relationship to her and with her and, you know, saw some of what was in it, I just thought, God, if this is my relationship with her, then in some way it speaks to my relationship with the earth herself.
Yes.
And I have to sort this out.
Exactly, yes, yes. Well, I haven't worked out yet. We've been in the new house one night. And I always went out evening and morning and walked around our garden because we had a circular garden around the house and open to the sky, and the Milky Way went right over the top of the house. And I would do the same for the moon and the stars. There's more of the stars, actually, than for the moon, but more and more for the moon lately. And the new house, I haven't got that space, so I'm going to have to work out how to do it. And I'm incredibly conscious of the fact that we moved a whole load of stuff yesterday, and I just didn't make time for the sacred.
Yeah.
Well, I have to.
Yeah, and also give yourself a break. You know, you're moving house.
It's
massive.
I know, it's huge. It's been a bit of a year, really.
Yeah.
But yes, it is massive. But one's also aware that the house is questing too. It wants to know who's in.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and it wasn't getting very good vibes from us last night.
Yeah. I don't think they're all too knackered. You can go back today and go and say hello to all of it.
I think
in
it'll
every
be
room
tomorrow,
and
actually.
Right, fair.
I'll be going back and loading another truck when we finish this. So I got my karma because I dropped a camp bed on my husband down the stairs at my mother's while we were clearing her house. So he dropped a sofa on me yesterday. So first entrance into the new house with the first bit of furniture, and it tips over going through. It was really difficult getting through the front door. It's a little cottage.
Yeah.
It doesn't like big furniture. It doesn't see the point of comfort. You're having a sofa. Anyway, it fell on my head. So I'm sitting in the porch with blood coming down my face.
Oh, no, Maggie.
Yes. And bless him, he couldn't find the rescue remedy. It's one of those... This is one of those women things which I learnt from my mother and I still have to get over, which means sitting there going, I have blood falling down my forehead and I have to get up and go and find the rescue remedy myself.
Yeah. Yes. Anyone thinking of moving in the near future, tip number one, make yourself a little basket full of a flask of something delicious and the rescue remedy.
I had.
And
he couldn't find it.
Okay.
But yes, you must always have the kettle and your supper, and the first thing you must do is make your bed.
Yeah.
Get the bed up the stairs, get the mattress on it, make it, because at some point...
You're going to need to fall into it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. God, when we first got here, having absolutely been as clear as it is possible for one human being to be with another, we told the moving company that they're under no circumstances would they get a giant lorry up these lanes.
Yes. Oh,
to
God,
our
God,
house.
No, they wouldn't. No,
not a chance.
No.
And that please would they therefore move us in a couple of little vans. What turns up on the day?
A giant.
Absolutely giant lorry. Can it get up the hill? No, of course it can't. So we arrived in our new home with that basket and that basket only. So we arrived, it's so funny actually.
Oh,
it must have looked such a sight. We arrived here in a little Morris Traveller. We had Fergus, 6'2", me, three, you know, largish boys. I mean, they were only boys at the time, but a very large lurcher, five chickens. Who came in the car with us? Loose, I might add.
No!
And
that's wonderful!
And this, like, basket full of, you know, the boys had all brought a book and a cuddly, and
yes.
I've got my basket full of tea and rescue remedy and all the rest of it. And that was it. That was what we had. We had an empty house.
Oh, my
and
God.
And that.
So what did you do?
Oh, luckily, my mum came along.
Yes.
Bless her. Scooped us up, cooked us dinner.
Yeah.
And I think in the end, we actually all slept in her house, even though we really, really wanted to be here.
Of course you did. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, no beds, nothing.
Oh, nothing.
But we had, you know, we had to go to hers also with nothing. You know, obviously we're getting food and a bed, but, you know, there were no pyjamas, there were no toothbrushes.
Yeah.
There was
nothing.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Well, we had the additional... Strangely, we've got these two rescue hounds. They're lovely girls. One of them does have PTSD, there's no doubt about it. And she'd never been on wooden floors, so she was terrified of the clattering. And, of course, all the echoing in it, and there were no curtains and banging and all that. And neither of them had any concept of going upstairs because we've been living in a bungalow.
No way! Wait, They didn't ever go upstairs. You did have stairs.
We did, after Lyle's office. Oh, yes, they could go up there, and it was wicked to go up there, but there wasn't anything interesting. But the concept of going upstairs to bed. What? and it was really cold. And one of them hid under the bed to start with because she was so scared. But most of the night, there were four of us on the bed. We don't usually allow that, but there was just this pile of, we don't really know where we are. Can we sleep with you, please,
Beagle? Yeah, of course. Bless her little
girls. Well, we've gone round some circles now, haven't we?
Yes, we have. How are we doing for time?
We're fine. It's 22 minutes. So cycle back to appreciation.
Definitely.
Yes.
It's so funny. It's so funny. You don't like the word gratitude. I really don't like the word appreciation.
Let's be thankful.
Yeah, all right, let's be thankful. That's good. I like thankful.
Actually, I can adapt. I can use gratitude now I'm over it. It's like the name of God. You know, a lot of people won't say God because it's got so much stuff on it, which is exactly why the Hebrews don't pronounce it. They never say the name of God. They say the Lord, which is...
But they also say, they do say God, don't they? They just don't say Yahweh.
Well, yes, they probably, I don't know, Orthodox don't, no.
They don't use the word God.
No. And anyway, Yahweh isn't the name of God. That's one of these things that drives me crazy. It's one of the names of God. There's 10 names of God in the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And I actually think it's nice to call them the name of God you're appreciating. El Hai Shaddai is mine at the moment, which is known as the Living Almighty, but also the multi-breasted one, goddess of the moon.
You say it again.
El Hai Shaddai.
El Hai Shaddai. It means the multi-breasted one.
Well, it means, yes, it's that's the wonderful thing about Hebrew and the terrifying thing about Hebrew and other pictorial languages is the word does not translate into a word.
Right.
Or it doesn't even translate in a phrase. It can mean all these things. You know, it can mean, it means a picture.
Mm-hmm.
So if you looked at a picture, you wouldn't necessarily describe it in one sentence, would you?
No. Oh, definitely, not necessarily in one word.
And if you just stick to Yahweh, you've basically got the God of the Second Temple. And he's the one that sanctioned or allowed animal sacrifice. Whereas Eloah, which becomes Elohim as a plural, didn't.
So implicit in the word Elohim are many gods?
Yes.
Ha ha. And I should I?
El Hai Shaddai.
El Hai Shaddai.
Or just Shaddai will do fine.
Is before that then, presumably?
Yes, Abraham's God.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. And what is the picture?
Well, if you think about it, it would be the great statue of Artemis in Turkey.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah,
is it that?
It really would.
So absolutely, categorically, definitely a female born with many breasts.
So we believe, yes. Yeah.
And
the phrase can just simply mean the multi-breasted one. So it's the god that nurtures.
Okay. And why are you calling that a god instead of a goddess?
Because it's a generic for me.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. The aspect of the divine that nurtures you like a mother.
Mm-hmm. El-I Shaddai.
El-Hai Shaddai.
El-Hai Shaddai.
I'll write it down for you.
Thank you.
But certainly, yes, very moon-oriented. And the interesting thing about the moon is it's usually associated with the feminine. In Kabbalah, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because the moon represents the ego consciousness, and certainly my teacher didn't associate it with the feminine also, because it could have got into a patriarchal hierarchy thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't necessarily have it as a gender, but once you've got over that, once you've got over your problems with names of things and aspects of things, I now happily come back to the moon as being feminine.
Yeah. There's a big story, evidently, with the whole thing of the sun. Currently, if the moon is feminine, people tend to refer to the sun as masculine.
Exactly.
And apparently there's no historical accuracy in that at all.
No, it's just the sun is bigger and more powerful than the moon.
And therefore he's a boy.
Therefore it's a boy. Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's why my teacher didn't go that way,
yeah.
which I'm very pleased about, actually, now.
There are many more goddesses of the sun than there have ever been gods of the sun.
Yes. Yes, but we just... Oh.
It's all very interesting.
It is all very interesting. I was just thinking about the Japanese system of the kamis.
What's
the
a kami?
Shinto system. Every hill has its god.
Oh, absolutely.
A kami. And I know that too. Having lived down here, you experience it. And I don't know the god of our new land yet. I did send her a greeting and a blessing this morning and said, I really am sorry. I'm very deeply appreciative of this place and this land, and I will come and get back to you later.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, this is an answer phone message, but I promise I'll get on to you later.
Just moving my stuff.
Yes.
I'm recording my podcast. Yeah.
And I've done something very brave for
me. What have you done?
Well, always when we've moved house, and we've moved house about 6 times in all our years together, Lion has had the bigger office.
Uh-huh.
Because he has lots of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And we don't have a garage at the new place. We've got a little lock-up, but he's got lots of less space. But I fell in love with my office, and it's the biggest room apart from the bedroom. And I actually put my foot down and said, it's my turn, thank you, I'd like the bigger office. And that's actually huge for me.
Hurrah for you!
Yes.
Well done!
Because even though, you know, big, strong, powerful woman, being a chief executive, interviewed Margaret Thatcher, all that kind of thing, I'm still a wuss. And, you know, this morning I made him a chicken mayo sandwich because he was going to go out without breakfast. And I knew it was stupid and he wasn't going to stop for breakfast. So I was mummy again, you know, and you think, well...
Well, that's pretty wifey as well as
mummy. It's very wifey, yes.
Or, yeah, even just caring friendy.
It's probably guilt for having the biggest room.
No, it's not. Don't you dare.
It's taking care of him.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to setting up my altar there because the room's bigger. So I can actually have a bit more space and I'll be able to have my elk horn on it and I'll be able to have a bigger table and have more stuff on it. And there's something calling me to buy a bunch of flowers to take back to the house today.
Mm-hmm. As an offering for the house?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Can I just, on behalf of Zero Waste, which I know you're on the same page as me.
Yeah.
No, well, I doubt you'll find much to pick at the moment. But and for me, picking some out is absolutely out of bounds. Mm. For me, you can pick what's in your garden, but you can't pick what's in the hedgerows.
Yeah.
It belongs to everyone, and fundamentally it belongs to the fairies.
Yes.
You know, it belongs to itself.
I do have the odd wild strawberry, but I do ask.
Yeah, that's different. That is different. But, yeah, don't go to some beastly garagey place.
No.
Go to an actual florist where you don't receive a whole bunch of shitty plastic
You're
not buying flowers.
Yeah.
Certainly if you go to the florist around here, you're not buying flowers that have been flown.
Yeah. I think she'll wait till tomorrow for the flowers then.
Mm.
So I can go somewhere nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there will be flowers.
There is.
And the lovely thing is that there's one of those bushes. I had the flowers of it when I got married to Jonathan because it was January. And it blooms in the winter. It's little white flowers with a pink heart. I don't know what they're called.
Yes, I can't think what they're called either, but they're so lovely,
and
aren't they?
And they flowered yesterday in the garden. I didn't know there was a tree
Of the
there.
New house?
Yes.
Oh,
and that's
glorious.
A Gabriel sign. Because Gabriel is archangel of the moon and the home and the domesticity. And one of the things I did to get the house, because it is an absolute miracle we got somewhere in Devon. It really, really is.
Yeah,
given
totally
the situation. And I don't deny that for a minute, even though I'm going, bloody hell, I want to go back to the old one, but that's just me. I'll be fine by the end of the week. But asking Gabriel for a house, and then on the first day when you move in, one of her signs is white flowers, like white lilies.
Mm.
So there you are, your white flowers in the garden saying welcome.
Appreciations.
Yeah. We have a willow tree and an oak tree, and I think we have a pear.
Ooh!
I don't know, but it's not an apple tree. It's got big, sort of almost heart-shaped leaves.
That doesn't sound like
no,
a pear.
Not quite heart-shaped. I only saw it in the torchlight last night.
If it was a pear, I'd be surprised if it had leaves at all at this time of year.
It's still not lost all of them. It's very sheltered, that garden.
Mm.
Anyway, we'll
Sounds
find
amazing,
out.
Amazing, yeah.
The huge appreciation of what's going to come up in spring.
Yeah, yeah.
What's here? And I've got a greenhouse.
Oh,
I've got a greenhouse.
Wow, heaven.
Anyway, see, just talking to you, I'm more and more appreciative of the new place every second.
Hurrah! And yes, it's, you know, yeah, like you said, it's a cottage, it's in Devon, it's near people and places that you love.
Yeah.
And it's yours. It's a home, fundamentally. It's
yes.
a home.
It's a home where we can, once we're all in, I think we're going to shut the door and stay in for a week.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and then you can do lots of tender loving of
yes.
honouring of the spirit of the house and the spirit
yeah.
of the garden and finding out what they need and
absolutely
negotiating.
Ooh, negotiating, eh? What do I got to negotiate?
Well, sometimes what the spirit of a house asks for is not necessarily something you're willing to give. But they can... Typically, my experience has been that, for example, when we got here, what the spirit of the house really, really wanted, bearing in mind it had been empty for possibly 2 years, I can't remember, it had been empty and a bit unloved, even though it was deeply loved by the people who'd
lived there before.
It had been rented out to people who really loved it, and before that it had been owned by, you know, family, but then sadly they were getting divorced, the children had all left home, you know, blah, blah. But it had the spirit of the house had clearly been happiest at a time when the front door and the window frames had all been painted red. It had felt truly loved and honoured. And at some point it had all been painted white and it was quite badly painted and a bit shabby. And the whole place was just seemed, you know, terribly unloved and shabby and stank impressively of rat and, you know, blah, blah. It was a bit sad. And so what the spirit of the house wanted was for the doors and windows to be painted red.
Oh.
But what we came to between that spirit and me was the knowing, the realisation that what that meant for it was loved and appreciated and that I could paint them green
with
that
love.
Was absolutely fine
as long as
to me that was loving and appreciating and, you know, completely in love with this place and wanting to tend it and care for it. And as soon as that was my motivation for green rather than red, it was like, yes, hooray, green, you know.
Lovely. Well, I knew the moment I walked in that the front door was asking to be painted on the inside, because it's really shabby. It's been thoroughly repaired, but it's just it's really shabby. Why should it be really shabby?
Yeah, no.
It deserves to be better than really shabby.
Definitely.
Yes. I'll probably have to work out a colour and ask permission, but we'll negotiate.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. That was what I was going to ask you. How do you negotiate with a house? You just tell it, this is how I love and honour you. Can you accept that?
Well, yeah, and also ask.
Yes.
Ask, how do you, you know, what is it you need? I want to make this my home. I want to be happy here and I want to love you and for you to be happy that we live here.
Yes.
What needs doing?
Lovely. Beautifully simple.
Mm.
And that's us for today. So okay. We ran some circles there. But just to finish, if you are thinking about some Thanksgiving, she says using the third word, and you don't know how to get round to it because you don't feel grateful for things, really, really start simple. Just use your five senses and think of five things that you love to see, whether you can see them at the moment, five things that you have seen that you love to, five things that you like to eat or drink, five things that you love the smell of, five things you love the taste of, and five experiences of touch which you've loved. Mm. And we've all got those. And you started. Hopefully. You're 25 immediately.
Although with COVID knocking out people's senses of smell, there'll be some people wailing, I can't smell anything, or potentially can't taste anything.
And maybe the wailing is important. Maybe we actually are in a time where we just need to do a bit of grieving.
Definitely. But and also have appreciation for the fact that you did, for the fact that you enjoyed it enough to now miss it, and for the fact that you've still got the rest of your senses. You know, there are always, I don't mean to sound kind of preachy or whatever, but there's always something to be grateful for.
There is. And it, by the law of attraction, which is law, it draws more of it. Sometimes I get people saying to me, I've already got that. I don't have to attract it by being grateful for it. And you say, well, in maintaining it would help.
Mm. Well, I can't imagine having that sort of attitude. That's bizarre. Anyway, we mustn't wobble on.
Oh, wobbling on. Oh, lovely. Let's wobble out to the kitchen and get a cup of tea. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.